Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the interview show here on the Pro Wrestling Ponderings podcasting network. My name is Jerome Cusan, and here tonight we've got a bevy of interviews to get to. Very good stuff here. First up, we're going to have Nigel McGuinness on the line. Then we're going to take you to some interviews that I conducted this past Friday night at AAW with Derek St. Holmes and Matt Fitchett. A couple of very good interviews forthcoming. But my co-host, especially for the Nigel McGuinness interview, is Chris GST, the webmaster of the website. Chris, how are you doing?
I am doing well, Jerome. Just enjoying the sun here on the West Coast.
So this past weekend, of course, I was very busy with AEW Pro as well as Shimmer Women's Wrestling. Three very good shows I saw, AEW's 8th Anniversary show, as well as Shimmer Volumes 45 and 46, whenever those DVDs come out. Strongly recommend everybody check them out as soon as possible. And I just wanted to thank those promotions for their hospitality this past weekend and making me a small part of a very successful weekend.
Most definitely. And I wanted to add in that we at PWP definitely thank Nigel McGuinness for spending some time with us to talk about his Kickstarter project. Very exciting. He has hit the goal, but as always, you can always donate more. So lots of stuff. Listeners there, just please donate, even if it's just a dollar. Anything will help him get this project out of there. He mentions on the interview over 60-plus hours of footage he's going to be going through. So we definitely want to see this project come out. So please donate what you can.
So without any further ado, let's take you to the Nigel McGuinness interview right now. Joining us on the line right now is a man who is he's a very busy guy, even though he's not really wrestling anymore. He's got his documentary, his Kickstarter project. He's just a man about the country right now. Nigel McGuinness is on the line. Nigel, thank you very, very much for joining us.
No worries. No worries at all. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty well. Chris, yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well here, too. Enjoying, hopefully, what will be a sunny day.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So the first question, Nigel, I think we have to let's just talk about the documentary first. Is what kind of inspired this project when you first decided I want to record my retirement tour?
Colt Cabana, really, in two words. He'd done his Wrestling Road Diaries DVD and had quite a lot of success with it. I hadn't actually seen it at that point, but I'd heard nothing but great things about it, and everyone said it was a great finished product, you know, that you can buy at cultmerch.com, plug there, and, you know, so I talked to him about it, and, you know, and said I was doing this retirement tour, and, you know, I didn't know what I was going to be left with, and you know, I didn't have, you know, any money to invest in people, you know, paying for someone to take me while I was going along, so I was kind of limited, and I didn't know whether it would be a waste of time or whatever. So I talked to him, and he just said, you know, all you can do is just do it, you know. And I think the way he approached the Wrestling Road Diaries is that he just, you know, paid someone to follow him around and videotape it. And, you know, he figured, you know, if he didn't have something at the end of it, well, at least he'd still have the story of a weekend or a week in his life as a professional wrestler that he'd have the rest of his life, you know. Or he might, you know, stumble upon something good that you know, make an entertaining documentary. So that's what happened in the end. And so I kind of approached it in the same way. You know, luckily I had a very good friend of mine that bought me a video camera so I could record myself as I was going along. And I did my best with it, you know. Just took it everywhere, tried to film stuff, tried to film myself. You know, even if I just enlisted the help of a stranger on the street, it was just the best I could do with it, you know. And documentary filming making at its most basic.
Right. And I mean, it's pretty great. When I first heard of your Kickstarter project, it was on Twitter. I just was lucky enough to be on that night when you announced it. And I emailed a lot of the staff here at PWP, and the overall thought when we all got together, we were very much excited for this. I know a lot of us donated and we spread it out to the fans and the followers.
Thank you.
No problem at all. And, you know, obviously you reached out. You know, you got others to help you film. You filmed a lot of your own footage. Was there anything that surprised you that you care to reveal or tease, you know, to the viewers and to the people that have donated that that they might see in this documentary? I know that you put out some footage out there. We've seen Austin Aries, Jimmy Jacobs, TJ Dalton. You know, a lot of people obviously helped you with this. Was there anything that you care to reveal that some of the, I guess, the viewers will see.
Not so much. I mean, if you go on there and you see the highlight trailers, there's one more highlight trailer to come out, which is probably the most introspective and, you know, heartfelt of all of them. Nothing that springs to mind off the top of my head. And I think to a certain extent, when I start editing this together and going through all the hours and hours of footage, it's going to be an emotional journey for me as well, because I don't really know what I've got in terms of, you know, story. I mean, you know, what sort of a finished product it's going to be. Is it going to be upbeat, downbeat, very introspective? You know, how am I going to try and keep things moving along? I'm really not sure. So I'm excited about that, just to find out, you know, the general feel of it. You know, it was great to be able to talk to so many people along the way. I didn't get to talk to as many people as I wanted to. I didn't get to wrestle as many people as I wanted to. You know, it's kind of all thrown together at the last minute. But I said, you know, as you'll see on the trailer, like, you know, it's just, I've got one last chance to go out and, you know, wrestle as many places as I can and say goodbye to as many people as I can. And that's what I did, you know. So you sort of take it for what it was. It wasn't ideal. It maybe wasn't exactly what I would have planned, starting out, but, neither was my career. So there you go.
So with things coming together so quickly, what were some of the goals that you had for the actual farewell tour?
I guess for the most part, it was just to get out to as many places I could so that any fans that wanted to come out and see me one last time wrestle, you know, could have a chance to do that. And I was really touched by so many people that did. You know, when you haven't wrestled for WWE and you don't have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people following you on Twitter, sometimes you get a sense that, man, you don't really exist. No one really knows who you are, you know, compared to those guys. So I didn't know how many people were going to come out and watch, and there were people that drove 4, 5, 6 hours, you know, into the middle of West Virginia just to see me one last time. I was really touched by that, you know. But also there was an internal emotional journey that I was going on as well. I wanted to try and understand what my career was and understand, you know, what my impact was and, you know, whether my career was a success or a failure.
Yes, and definitely within 3 or 4 days of you putting out the project, you were practically at the goal that you reached. And obviously a lot of other wrestlers have taken this journey with you, and it's very touching to see the footage that you put out there exclusively for the donators. So I encourage anyone listening to this at the time, continue to donate. It's going to be a great project. One question I know that I was wondering, though, was, as I said, we saw a lot of footage of Austin Aries and Jimmy Jacobs, and a lot of your friends in the wrestling business. Was it hard to get possibly permission, not necessarily from them, but their employers, to possibly be involved with the project? Or was it pretty much everyone seems to support this project and pretty much just wanted to help you in any way they could?
At the time, you know, the way I presented it to them, as was the case, it was like, I'm filming this stuff. Will it ever become a documentary? I don't know. You know, it's not like this is definitely going to happen. But, you know, I said, I value your opinion on wrestling. And so, you know, if you wouldn't mind, we'll just, you know, take some stuff, see what we have. And I think the bottom line is that they all trust me, that there's no way I'd put anything out there that would in any way hurt them. And I don't think, you know, there's anything they said that could anyway hurt them either, you know. I mean, for the most part, everyone was talking in general terms about, you know, this wonderful, crazy industry that they've spent their life pursuing, just the same as me, you know. And everybody is their own boss, you know. I don't think there was anyone that was currently employed by WWE that was on there, people that were in the past. I mean, you know, Evan Bourne's on there, but again, there wasn't too much that, you know, he said, you know, that, you know, could be an issue anyway. So everyone was very, you know, very accommodating in that regard.
Now, on Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling podcast, you didn't seem very sure of the fact that you could even raise the $32,000 or a certain amount of money for the Kickstarter. But now that you're at $38,454 and there's still 21 days to go, kind of what are your thoughts on just the response and how quickly you've been able to raise all of this money?
I mean, you can see on there when you, if you look on the front page, I recorded a little message at the beginning there once we reached the goal. I was just so touched and moved and humbled by the show of support from so many people. And even, you know, here I are in, Los Angeles now, and I went to the Pro Wrestling Guerrilla show last night in Reseda, which was fantastic. And, after the show, and I wasn't there to be part of the show, but after the show, there were a couple of young guys that were just starting out in the business and were helping set up the, ring and stuff like that. He came up to me and said, look, I don't have a credit card. I can't really afford much money, but they literally reached into their wallet and gave me a few bucks and said, you know, I just wanted to support in some way. And, I mean, that's, you know, emblematic of, you know, the entire support project so far. It's, I've just been amazed by how much people believe in this, you know, because, you know, I think everybody at some point has felt the same way that, that I felt in their, that career, that everybody has those doubts about, you know, what they're doing and what they've achieved and everything else. And I think they genuinely care about the story and want to see, you know, that, that journey. So I've been moved. I've been really humbled by it. And, you know, it's funny. When I started going on the tour, I had a lot of doubts about so many things in my career. And it was almost like, you know, I had to finish the tour and do this whole Kickstarter project to understand, you know, what I really had there. You know, and that certainly gave me a sense of resolution without a doubt that moving forward, whatever I do or don't do in professional wrestling, that I've achieved something and that I've, you know, made a difference and that, you know, I was blessed to have the career that I had, no matter what happened in the end, you know. And, so, you know, like you said, we're at 38 grand now. You know, I put 32 up there because that was really the basic. That was the, by the time you pay fees, by the time you pay taxes, by the time you pay for the equipment to edit it, by the time you pay to have documentaries actually, DVDs rather, you know, produced and shipped and all the other rewards and pay for music rights and any footage rights I'm going to have to pay for. It doesn't leave you much at all. In fact, to be honest with you, that 32 grand basically is a break-even proposition if it takes me 3 months to edit together and make the producer DVDs to get shipped out there. So now any money on top of that is really, you know, the more money it's pledged, the better the DVD is going to get in terms of, you know, national distribution. If we can get it out there to into stores, onto iTunes or wherever, you know, the more people can understand this wonderful business that, you know, we're all huge fans of. And I think that's what I'm, and as I said, I don't know exactly what the finished product's going to be, but, you know, the gut instinct that I have now is I'm trying to show that, you know, professional wrestling, it's, I mean, the days of people saying, you know, oh, wrestling's fake, long gone, you know, I mean, the horse has really left the barn a long time ago, you know. But I still don't think people have an appreciation for how difficult it is to be a good professional wrestler, you know, and they don't, I don't think necessarily understand on the independents how much talent there is out there and how much personality and how much heart and how much emotion there is, you know, because most people only see WWE and they have a sense of it, I guess, from watching The Wrestler, you know, the movie, where you could see a guy that made it to the top. And so, oh God, there are other places, but you don't necessarily see the guys that are, you know, there for so much of their career. You know, so many guys that I've met in this business, some of them are dead now, that you never really got to that stage and should have done. And they're so much better than half the guys that are there now, you know, and that's not a knock on any of the guys that are there. It's just that is the nature of the business today, you know, but I just thought it would be nice to try and present that side of things and see, you know, see part of, you know, the American experience, which independent professional wrestling is.
So I want to ask about your perspective on the fans and how they've changed. And I know, again, on the Art of Wrestling podcast, you talk about how, you know, fans seem quick to move on to things. And I sort of agreed with that point. But now that you've raised this money and have had the chance to, you know, having people give you money and all that stuff. So what is it? How is your perspective on the independent wrestling fans change in all of this?
I always had respect for them because I always know that without them I never would have had a career, you know. But I guess, like I said, I've just been that much more touched and it's that much clearer to me now how much, you know, and I think for a lot of my career, certainly when I was in Ring of Honor and I was hurt all the time, you know, there was a lot of negative backlash from some of the fans about me, you know, having to take time off because I was injured. It was kind of a love-hate relationship. I knew there were wonderful fans out there. I knew there were some fans that really didn't care either. But, you know, I think in my mind I thought, well, you know, I know everybody cares and I know, you know, everybody, like, you know, understands and sympathizes, but there's a difference between that and actually, you know, going to the extent of signing up and pledging money and really saying, I want to support this. And I wasn't sure how many people would actually go that far. And so the fact that so many people went that far, you know, just speaks volumes for what a wonderful, you know, sort of fan base independent professional wrestling has, you know, and I'll always remember that.
It is certainly a great fan base, and I personally was touched to see how many people were promoting this project. Nigel, just got to say, an early memory of you, I believe one of the first matches I ever saw you in was a four-way in Ring of Honor that also had Jimmy Rave and Austin Aries and Rocky Romero and yourself. It was truly one of my favorite matches, and it, obviously to some, they might remember it as well. And, you know, just coming from that, they're hopefully, you know, you've shown a lot of Ring of Honor footage. It's a huge part of your history. And the tremendous feud that you have with Daniel Bryan, a.k.a. Bryan Danielson, however fans remember him. Are there any other memories that you'll be touching upon in the documentary from the past, or is it pretty much just the major ones?
I think the major ones. I mean, like I said, it's really too early at this point until I look at the footage that I have to know exactly what I'm going to be really touching on. It's still, you know, still early in the game yet. I'm going to basically watch the 60 hours of footage. I'm going to catalogue everything that I think is interesting that could fit in a two and a half hour maybe documentary. And then I'll see what fits in that sort of framework, you know, what's relevant to that. You know, if I'm sitting in with somebody in a cafe and they're talking about a certain match or a certain issue within the industry, then, you know, maybe there's something from my history that links up to that.
So I want to ask, obviously, one of your jobs now is announcing the Ring of Honor television and the iPay-per-views, and so you're still connected to the business. Who is it? Who do you like watching, especially now with a lot of the roster's experienced so much turnover, even in the last couple of years? Who do you like watching to wrestle, especially when you're announcing?
It's tough to narrow that down, you know. I mean, I love watching Eddie and seeing how far he's come along, Eddie Edwards. You know, when I was leaving, he was just, you know, making some noise with Davey as the American Wolves. And, you know, in the time since I've gone, him and Davey and you know, a few of the other guys have stepped up. I love watching, you know, a lot of that old crew, the Briscoes, you know, a lot of the guys that have been around, you know, since the start, Roddy, you know, those are the guys that, you know, I see as the, you know, the backbone of Ring of Honor. And then I get excited about the young guys and say, seeing right now, who's going to step up? Who's going to, you know, move into that sort of, sphere, you know? I love watching, you know, Ciampa, Tommaso Ciampa, I think, is a guy who's got, you know, great opportunity to move ahead. Mike Bennett as well, I think, is wonderful. But I'm quite partial to watching Mike Bennett wrestle because I always get to watch Maria at the same time. So, you know, it's, but there's a lot of guys. TJ Perkins, I think, is fantastic as well. You know, I mean, I wrestled him when I was wrestling and, you know, I always feel tremendously talented.
I mean, obviously, and there's Ciampa, there's guys like Michael Elgin and Kyle O'Reilly as well. And if you had the opportunity to wrestle one more match in Ring of Honor, and I'm gonna press the issue on this one. If you could wrestle one more time in Ring of Honor against one of the newer guys, who would it be?
That's a tough one. I don't think I can necessarily pick one person, to be honest with you, at this point. I really couldn't pick someone. Just because in my head, I'm so, I've shut off the idea of wrestling for Ring of Honor again.
Right, yeah. I mean, I understand. I completely understand.
I couldn't even imagine, you know. I know, like, I mean, I could have great matches with a lot of these guys still, you know. I mean, Kevin Steen, I think, is, You know, he's such a fantastic talent, you know, and just such a great ability to connect with the fans. And that's as big a deal as anything else, you know. That's really the most important thing in any entertainment industry is can you connect with the people? And I think Kevin Steen does that brilliantly.
Chris, go ahead.
All right. Well, Nigel, you know, we definitely are excited about this project, but also you recently put out on Twitter that Ring of Honor is doing another project with you involved. I believe it's going to be a compilation. Can you tell us about any of the matches that might be put on the set? And if not, just how involved are you with the compilation?
Basically, the last iPay-per-view we did in New York, I sat down with Shane Hagedorn beforehand. It was very accommodating in terms of, you know, giving me the opportunity to talk about a lot of the matches. And I don't know off the top of my head what the matches are. I think it was, you know, some of the big ones, some of the, you know, the most important ones. Obviously the ones with, I think, Aries in New York, a couple of the ones with Dragon, Generico gets on there as well. I think Marufuji, maybe Kenta as well, that sort of physically very trying match in New York. I think that's on there. But there's a good two or three DVDs worth that's on there. And then the sit down sort of, you know, shoot, if you want to call it that. I hate that word, but, you know, that sort of introspective, heartfelt sit down interview as well that will, I think, you know, relate to a few of the matches on there, you know. So it's, I'm not sure when it's supposed to be out soon. I mean, check out ROHwrestling.com. It's going to be a great compilation for sure. And I think to a certain extent it will somehow tie into the documentary because, there's a lot of new Ring of Honor fans now that arguably maybe didn't see a lot of the old stuff from when I was champion. And I think a lot of times people have forgotten. I've forgotten half my matches, you know. So I think it would be a great opportunity for people to own, you know, an important part in my career, but I think also an important part in Ring of Honor's career.
For sure. And definitely there's going to be a lot of matches on there that I hope new fans will check out. As Nigel said, check out ROHwrestling.com. Nigel, we appreciate the time that you've spent with us. As always, we like to give our guests some time to plug away anything. So, sir, take it away, your website, your Twitter, anything you want.
All right, no worries. It's NigelWrestling.com is the website that everything's going to be based off. It's always a good place to start. But the main project is Kickstarter.com. You can go to my Twitter, which is @McGuinnessNigel. I'm on Facebook as well, but just, you know, a very brief search of the worldwide web will, you know, you'll be able to find it on Kickstarter. But if you just go to kickstarter.com and put Nigel into the search engine, it will bring up the page there, and you can check out the trailer. You can check out all the highlight trailers of some of the footage that, you know, I'm hoping to include in the final thing. Yeah, you can pledge if you want. Just tell people about it and help support, you know, this wonderful sort of part of Americana.
Definitely. And fans, as Nigel said, go to Kickstarter.com, look up Nigel McGuinness. It's a great project. Please donate some more. As Nigel said on here, really the base amount has been reached, but anything extra helps. As he said, 60 hours worth of footage to go through. And I know that a lot of us fans, we want to see this happen, and we're very excited about this.
I appreciate it.
Definitely, sir. Thank you for everything you have done for us. As always, fans, check out ROHwrestling.com, where Nigel is the commentator, and he does a tremendous job. Tons of just experience and knowledge and insight from him. And definitely check out the DVD compilation when it comes out. Fans, for Jerome, this is Chris. I'm the web admin of PWP. Thank you for listening to us, and thank you, Nigel, once again for your time.
I'm sitting here with a man who I can't believe I've never had you on the show before, but you are one of the voices of AEW. You're a wrestler. You are a Twitter educator of wrestling. Derek St. Holmes, thank you for joining me here tonight on the show.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's fun to be here.
So, Derek, I want to talk about your Twitter first, because a lot of people would say Derek St. Holmes on Twitter doesn't really make sense. But you've made Twitter make sense for you, because what is it that you do on Twitter that's unique compared to everybody else?
Well, what I really like to do on Twitter, it's a challenge for me. It was originally brought up to me as, Derek, this is a way you can do something to stay relevant. Of course, I avoid the Facebook, because I'm convinced that's going to be the downfall of society. But with the Twitter, it's a unidirectional rant that I can do. And what I like to do is take those 140 characters and just try and impart just basic common sense information. Things that I learned, things that I've picked up in wrestling. Just little lessons that, upon first reading, might not make any sense. But I'm really into the... I want you to read something I put out there and let it sit and fester for a while. And then when you're in the shower 3 days later, suddenly it's going to just pop and it's going to make perfect sense. A recent one that I just said, if you're getting cheap heat from the crowd, you don't call a fat person fat. Why don't you do that? This person already knows they're fat. For all you know, they've taken abuse on that their entire life. They could be taking medicine to try and keep from being fat. They already know that. You tell them that, they can't come back to it. That's why you call it, if you see a fat person in the crowd, if you want to get heat, you call them ugly. Because everybody thinks they're beautiful. Then they can come back and say, I'm not ugly, you're ugly. You know, it's a very...
I believe Chris Jericho put something in his book, something similar, about calling an opponent either bad or stupid, or just bearing him to the point where they couldn't come back.
Right. You don't call somebody old, because, again, that can't be come back. And then if you get beat, he was fighting Bulldog Bob Brown. Said, well, when I beat you, and I will, then you'll get beat by an old person. It just shuts them down. Other little things. The dark match tonight, they broke my rule of opponents wearing the same color. It's visually disturbing to a fan to have two people wearing the same color fighting, because they should really be a team. Basic things like that. Getting back to your original question, I just like to use Twitter as a way to inspire thought and inspire, you know, give people something to think about as they're coming up in the business.
Now, are you trying to educate wrestlers, fans, both? What are you trying to do when you're sending out these tweets?
Well, obviously it's for wrestlers, but I'm sure that a lot of fans will look at it and say, oh, that kind of makes sense. Now I get what's going on. Sure, it kind of exposes the business, but we all know the state of that.
Yeah, I know. This is the fact that you're sitting here doing the show kind of exposes the business.
That's true. But I also think a fan could read it and get something out of it, but if a wrestler reads it, they'll get something totally different out of it. One big thing I like to state is you have to know the rules before you can break them. So I'm just trying to portray the rules of wrestling so that people can understand that, and then they can learn what they can do differently to make it more effective.
Yes, we're recording right now. I'm going to get you next. So before we move on, Derek St. Holmes. So how do you spell Derek St. Holmes? Just get your Twitter handle on.
You can find me at STHOLMESESQ. So it's at St. Holmes Esquire. As far as spelling my first name, I don't really care how they spell it on the poster. My legitimate name is spelled D-A-R-Y-C-K, and that's what's on my Twitter. But as long as I'm paid in cash or the check doesn't bounce, you can spell it any way you want.
Now, where did you get this wisdom from, and why do you have these beliefs in wrestling that you do?
Well, how can I explain this? I believe it was in Jerry Jarrett's book, The Best of Times, by Mark James, which I recommend to people. Every time a new wrestling promotion comes up, they always say, we're going to reinvent wrestling. We're going to do something different. However, the one constant that's been on TV for 50 years is professional wrestling. There's a way it can be done. There's ways the scripts can be massaged. But the basic skeleton is always the same. It's always professional wrestling.
Now, I notice a lot of the rules that you put on are kind of unwritten rules. And why is it that these rules aren't commonly known today as they were back then? Because it seems like there's been a move away from tradition, and certain companies are trying to change the rules, certain guys try to do different things, and it doesn't work. Why do you think there's been such a shift?
Well, because the business is so wide open. I mean, I don't mean to state, I don't mean to portray that I have any sort of sacred knowledge. The fact that the business is so open enabled me to get into it 15 years ago. But you're getting further and further away from the people that did this week in, week out, that learned from the old timers, driving in the cars, doing all this. A lot of this wasn't written down because you didn't want to have anything written down that anybody could find. So this is all knowledge that would be imparted in the car. But now you've got somebody wants to open a school, they'll train 12 people, two people in that class decide they don't like what's going on in the school, so they go open up their own schools and open up their own promotion. You're getting further and further away from somebody that has the complete picture of what it would take to wrestle and entrance the fans week in and week out.
And what makes that so interesting is that in my field, which is like English, right?
Okay.
I can go back and I can find theory for 100 years.
Uh-huh.
But if you're a wrestler, you can't do that. So I think not having that written down, it almost seems like it's really hurts the business.
Well, that's true. And I just did an interview on this the other day. A lot of the kids coming up, you can't really fault them because they don't know what they don't know. When I grew up, it was still the AWA, and you still had all the different territories that you could watch, and all of those promoters had their own philosophies that they would put forth in wrestling. Right now, it's all been co-opted into the WWE. The WWE has a house style that they train their people at. Not good, not bad. Obviously, it makes a lot of money. It's very good there. I don't have a contract, so I can't really complain. However, it does take out the subtleties that you would get when you'd have somebody that wrestled in Memphis and learned the brawling style, and then they went down to Florida and learned more of an amateur-based style, and then they went out to San Francisco and learned the high spots, and then they would take all of that knowledge, and then they would come to the AWA, which was an amateur-based fed, but they were also able to bring all of these other influences in there. You just don't have that travel. You don't have that going on right now. As far as current superstars that have that knowledge, obviously in the big time, you've got Regal imparting his knowledge to everybody. On the indie scene, of course, you've got Colt Cabana that can bring the British influence and the Jimmy Valiant and all that stuff together. It's really hard to find somebody that has that complete picture that can... Well, one, it's hard to find somebody that has the complete picture. Two, it's hard to find somebody that's able to communicate and teach that complete picture to somebody
else.
There's
so few veterans in wrestling now, especially on the independent scene.
That's true.
Like Mike Quackenbush is an old-timer at this point, and he's been in the business only about 15 years.
Oh, that's what I love. The fact that I've been in 15 years, people say, you're a vet. And I just kind of look at that and laugh and say, all I've done for the last 15 years is just stick around, you know. Obviously, outside of wrestling, I've always been, I'm very analytical by nature, so I always wanted to look into the history, look into, you know, where did today's scene come from, what was it built on, so I was always looking into history. It was very frustrating. How much time do we have, by the way?
Keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
It was always very frustrating when I was growing up. All I could really find on the history of wrestling were two books at my local library. One was The Main Event from Roberta Morgan, which, if you've seen, has a picture of Bob Backlund and superstar Billy Graham on the cover, and that went into the different territories. Two, there was a book called Whatever Happened to Gorgeous George by Joe Jairs that had two articles from Sports Illustrated in it, but then had different chapters on the different history of wrestling. It was in there that I learned of the donkey match, which I was very impressed at. No, this is good. This is actually Mike Petkovich tried to pull a rib on me one time, where the loser of this match, basically his opponent called him a dirty ass or something like that. So the loser of the match had to wash a donkey in the ring. Which I think is brilliant. We could do that here. I told Petkovich I would love to do that and love to lose. You could have the donkey out in the parking lot. You could have people take pictures with it. I mean, it's a money.
And it could go on YouTube and it could just be like a modern viral video.
Exactly. You know, so there's a way you could do this. But also, and getting back, it was so frustrating because those were the only two avenues of information that I had growing up. And then it was about the early 90s that I discovered the sheets. And I was like, oh my God, how long has this been going on? Which I actually found by writing through the classified ads in the back of Norman Keitzer's Wrestling News, which is an old wrestling magazine that came out of Minnesota. Got the Observer and got the Torch for years. I was like, oh my God. I'm proud to say I'm still one of the few people that gets the print Observer.
I think there are a lot of people that still get it.
Okay.
Just because they like the physical copy.
Well, my whole deal is you can't take a computer in the bathroom.
Exactly.
That's, you know, obviously you've got your Kindles or whatever, but, you know, whatever.
Our iPads, our
yeah,
phones.
Whatever. It's just not the same. Of that, you know, you get those 12 to 16 pages, especially the, it's kind of ghoulish, but the obituaries are just incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the best parts of The Observer, unfortunately.
Right.
You learn so much about the guy's lives.
Well, you learn that, and you learn what worked, and that can also give you... Oh, just recently, when Killer Carl Cox died, Meltzer put over this incredible match between him and Dick Murdoch from 1974 in All Japan, where all they did was right crosses to the jaw. It sounds very like, this isn't... That doesn't seem like a whole lot, but if you look at this match and look at how they sold every punch and how they sold and how they built, it's just incredible. Obviously, it wouldn't pass with a lot of the kids that are trained on WWE or TNA or something, or Ring of Honor, where
top this.
That's fine. That's. I'm not saying anything against it. It's just not what I choose to watch.
So you watch a lot of history, but you don't watch a lot of the current stuff. Because I know we've talked about this a little bit off the air.
Yeah.
You're not as big of a fan as the current stuff you like the older wrestling.
I just think that wrestling has evolved. Now I got to take my cranky old man voice out.
Put your cigar in your mouth. There you go.
But wrestling has become very self-referential in the fact that it would be hard, in my opinion, the opinions of Derek St. Holmes Esquire, you know, so all the heat comes to me, it would be very hard for the casual fan to pick up, say, an ROH tape and get what was going on because there's so much, and there's he's doing the sequence that was in Japan last week, or oh, he's doing this, oh, he's building up. It's very self-referential, and it's hard for people to get in. One of my Twitter feeds that I did recently was the fact that promoters should put in as one of the first three matches just a simple match where the heel's pulling hair, the referee's yelling at him. It establishes the rules so that it builds the show to your main event. Gagne was a big proponent of that. The first three matches, there were no clenched fists. It never went out of the ring. But then when it happened in the main event, you had impact on that. So, again, there's different ways to massage this script. Some people think you need a hot opener. Well, that's fine. You have the hot opener that makes everybody go, wow. But then that second match, you settle it back down. This is the match we're going to use to establish the rules for the rest of the show later on.
So how do you transfer that to now you do a lot of announcing for AEW with Phil Colvin? You've been doing it for the last few years. What have you learned just from announcing, watching the current scene? What impresses you? What do you dislike when you're announcing?
Well, the first thing I learned about announcing is it is a lot more difficult than a lot of people give it credit for this simple fact. You can't start talking unless you know where you're going with it and how you're going to finish it. You have to be thinking two or three sentences ahead, which once you get in the flow, it's very easy, but a lot of people don't realize that, and they're like, oh, I've got my three lines I want to get off. Where do I go at from here? What I like about doing it, I'm allowed to be creative, you know, much like a writer or something. I have to think of different ways to describe. I've described myself as a cross between Nick Bockwinkel and Dennis Miller when he was doing Monday Night Football back in the day. I'm sorry, that's not even recent history, is it?
I remember it.
Okay.
I was 16 when it happened, so I'll vouch for you on
you
this.
Son of a gun. Okay. What I don't like sometimes is if it is all spot, 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 action, 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 it's hard, one, to call the action, but two, to sell the impact of what's going on in the ring to somebody watching a match. If somebody grabs an arm twist, an arm bar, I can explain how that's pulling on the... Right over here, we have the champion of AEW, Silas Young. I know that he spends a lot of time in the gym. I know that because of that, he's lifting. He's probably got rotator cuff issues. So whenever anybody grabs a hold on him, I can sell that. Boy, he's got those good shoulders, but I know that if his lifting technique isn't good, that can cause a lot of damage. However, if they're in there doing zing, 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 it's hard for me to call that to the crowd, and also hard for me to say anything other than, oh, what an impact, oh, what an impact, oh, what an impact.
That's when Phil Coleman just takes over and starts shouting moves. But yes. Yeah, this is great. I feel like I'm learning something. I feel like I learned something from this Twitter.
One of my favorite people, Joey Eastman, complaining that I get radio time and he doesn't.
Joey Eastman, over. Just for the record, Joey Eastman stunned 4 people tonight, so I think he's gotten enough time. What do you think, Joey?
Thank you for making 4 guys look like shit tonight.
No, you were legitimate. I mean, they were stunned. They worked an entire match, and then you just stunned them. You took advantage of the situation.
Well, I'd like to point out that we were all in the match expending energy, but Joey was able to come in fresh at the end and get those 4 stunners in.
I agree. I think that's complete justification.
I will say that I've learned more in wrestling in 9 years from Derek St. Holmes than I have any other person outside of maybe
one.
I
love his Twitter feed. That's why I wanted to have him on.
Well, imagine driving from Chicago to Milwaukee with him once a month, learning just how the old guys did stuff with the mileage. Remember that?
Yeah.
There was so much that I learned on those road trips that I actually still pass on to guys.
Remember when we made fun of Prince Iakea going backwards from 30, and then we just giggled for 15 miles after that?
Yes, we did.
This is one of my favorite stories that I heard in Hawaii. The promoter there, Al Karasik, his show was a third to a half interviews. And one time they had 35 seconds left in the show, and to fill it up, it was nothing more than Prince Iakea. King Iakea in that booming voice, counting backwards from 30. It was just, 30, 29, and with his eyes and his expression, and he just... That would be amazing. Another story, another guy that just died, Handsome Johnny Barron. There's one interview where the guy with the microphone walked over. There was a coffin standing up against the wall. He says, well, we're supposed to be interviewing Handsome Johnny Barron at this time. They open the coffin lid. Handsome Johnny Barron is standing on his head in the coffin smoking a cigar. Wow.
Love it. We don't get the wrestling history lesson. We do a lot of indie wrestling coverage, but we don't get the wrestling history.
But see, it's things like that that I would love to do. Obviously, they had TV, and it was a different, you know, there were less avenues of entertainment. But to me, that's just, that's the meat. That's how can we pull this out of the people? You know, when wrestling was weekly. In Memphis, it was weekly for years, and in other territories, you had your weekly wrestling. You had to figure out 52 times a year how you got people back into that arena or whatever. It was a different focus.
So when you're announcing, who are some of the guys that have impressed you over the years that you say, that guy's a really good wrestler, I would watch him even if I don't necessarily watch the product?
I like Silas Young. I like Michael Elgin. Of course, I like Cole Cabana, but I like watching him just for stuff I can rip off. You know, the tag team wrestling in AAW is at such a high level. I'm glad I'm announcing because I don't know if I could compete like that. Honestly, I don't know if I'd want to compete like that because it is removed from the wrestling that I enjoy doing, but it's a very active product. It's very good. I like how AEW does have a vision and they stick to that.
And they come back here on a monthly basis.
That's
maybe not
right.
A weekly basis, but they do come back here
that's right,
every
you know,
month and they draw a good crowd.
That's true, and I'm glad to be a part of it, and I'm glad I found my little niche. It is kind of an ego blow when people are like, well, why don't you wrestle anymore, when you realize that, you know, I wrestle everywhere else. It's just here, they put me behind the mic, and I'm happy with that.
So what still gets you, as far as wrestling goes, what still gets you excited? Actually wrestling,
it's funny because some people would be like, ooh, I want to have a 5-star match, I want to do this, I want to do that. Whereas I will be like, I saw this exchange in this match from 74 or this match from 76. I'll be happy if I can get that move off. You know, if I can do that exchange, I'll be happy. Everything else takes care of itself.
All right, so you got to go call the last 2 matches, of course.
That's right.
Anything to plug real quick before you take off?
Please join my Twitter. Please support indie wrestling. If you like what you see, tell the local promoter that you like it. Tell the local promoter you want to see Derek St. Holmes in the ring.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I'm sitting here with a man who got his first victory in AEW tonight, a man who's been making waves in independent wrestling, Matt Fitchett. How are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. Feel even better to get that victory tonight.
All right, Matt. So I want to ask you, you've had an interesting run here in AEW in the last few months. You've had the opportunity to wrestle BJ Whitmer, wrestle an eight-man tag. You've tagged up with him the last couple times. So what's your experience been like with AEW the last few months?
Pretty great. I've liked it so far. I keep having great matches and good matches, and can't really ask for more.
So I want to ask about kind of the eight-man tag. I believe that was your debut, right? The eight-man tag at WCW Classic?
Yes, it
was. So what was that opportunity like, just to wrestle the quality of the guys that you did?
I felt kind of honored. I mean, Sam Callahan was in it. Gargano was in it. Some pretty big names on the indie scenes were in this match, and then... you know, make my debut and get thrown in there with those guys. Thought that was pretty cool. You know, I enjoyed it.
And obviously, I think the matchup a lot of people are talking about as far as AEW goes is your match with BJ Whitmer. What did that match do you think? What did it do for you?
I think that match let me show like another side of how I can wrestle, because I'm usually known for flipping around the ring and doing some cute stuff and things like that, but I guess what a lot of people don't know is I was an amateur wrestler since I was age 5, and I won a state championship in Illinois, and I like to chain wrestle a lot, so when I got to go in there and wrestle around with BJ, it was just a blast. I just loved it.
What would your amateur coach say if you were to show him some of your matches now?
Me and my wrestling coach don't have a very great relationship, so he'd probably... can I cuss on this? Okay, he'd probably say that you're a fucking idiot, and that probably thinks I'm on drugs and shit like that. But
the tattoos also probably.
Yeah. That too. Well, I mean, my senior year, I told him to go fuck off, and I quit wrestling. So.
But so as far as your match with BJ, obviously BJ is a veteran of this business, and he's done a lot in Ring of Honor and promotions like that, and he's done a lot of things. So what was the opportunity just to wrestle him and for him to allow you to have such an opportunity to break out?
Well, when I heard that I was wrestling BJ, I was pretty shocked. I thought it was cool, you know. Like you said, he's been all over. He's wrestled for Ring of Honor, and he's a veteran. And, you know, I thought this was a good opportunity for me. Like, I wanted to go out there, and I wanted to show something. I wanted AAW to know what Matt Fitchett was about, so...
Now, and then you've transitioned into having some tag team matches with him, and last month you had the opportunity to wrestle Jimmy Jacobs and Eric Cannon. What was that experience like for you?
I've wrestled Eric Cannon in other places. I've wrestled him a few times, and it's always fun wrestling with him, so being back in there with him was cool. I've never wrestled Jimmy before, the first time in the ring with Jimmy, so that was fun, and, you know, I never tagged BJ before either, so, I mean... It was quite the experience. It was kind of looking back on it, I wish going into the match I would have thought of more tag moves for me and BJ. But you know, we live in two different areas, so.
Now, what's it like to be in the ring with just three veterans, three guys who've been around the block so many times, and you're still relatively new as far as exposure?
Very nerve-wracking. It's, because, you know, you go out there, you don't want to mess up, you want to be on your top game and everything like that, so it's just, it's just a lot of nerves, really. I felt pretty comfortable, though, because, you know, I've worked with, BJ already, and I had worked with, Cannon before, so, I just wanted to make sure that I just kept everybody happy, and that, you know, not only making everybody in the ring happy, but I wanted to make the fans happy too. I wanted to give them their money's worth. That's what I try and do when I wrestle every time, is I want people to, you know, be able, you know, that show was pretty good. I got my money's worth, you know.
Now, the first three times you lost, but tonight you got you're even more of a breakout because you got to pin Christian Abel with an incredible finish.
Yeah.
How did that feel to actually execute the finish, get it right, and then get out of the ring?
Felt pretty good. I got goosebumps when I got the three count and the crowd went nuts. You know, that was cool. I was like, all right, you know, I mean, I've made a good impression here so far, and I plan to continue to keep doing that. And when I got backstage, a lot of people, it looked like I got power bombed, I guess, and I really don't know. It happened so fast. I thought I got the full rotation.
You did get the full rotation. It was very close. Very easily could have gone the other way, but you definitely got the full rotation in there. So what are your thoughts on the crowd? Because the crowd really seems to be taking you. I think your great performance has helped with that. But what are your thoughts on the AEW crowd?
I think first time they didn't know who I was, so, you know, they're a little rough on me.
Who the hell is this guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Who the hell is this guy with a bunch of tattoos and skinny as hell, you know? So, you know, that's
every
why...
Every other guy is skinny and has tattoos right now.
Yeah, you know,
Kelly Eastman giving me a look.
How the fuck do I get to be on this show?
You've been on
You're
it twice
on it right now.
You're on it right now.
That's true. So, you know, breaking in was a huge experience for me. You know, I got on the road with Moondog Spot, and he just took me under his wing, and I'm really fucking drunk. However, Jerome, I have two rats right outside.
Are you going to tweet about
one
it?
One for Matt, I'm one for Joey.
Of course, Matt. Of course, Matt.
You have to follow Joey Eastman on Twitter.
At
so you,
Joey Eastman.
You have to follow Joey Eastman on Twitter.
Because
especially this weekend.
I tweet about fucking bitches.
All
during
the
week. And then on the
sometimes
weekends
it's during,
wrestling.
Too.
Yes.
And it's very entertaining.
There was one time I tweeted about a date that I had when I brought her back to my house and everything else. I just like bitches. I like sluts. That's all I like. Am I ruining the podcast?
You're actually making it better.
Matt Fitchett, he's one of the... I saw him 2 weeks ago for the first time, or 3 weeks ago in St. Louis. Motherfucker blew me away in a tag match with Vega, O'Reilly, and Davey Richards. And it's sad because I see so much wrestling that I don't know any of the guys in a match, so for me to remember that match is really good.
Only and you could talk about...
He remembers women more than matches.
And then talking about Matt Fitchett.
I'm the king of the Segway.
You're the king of the
Segway. Buy a Segway.
Me and him have a lot in common. Just a lot of people don't know that.
Fucking bitches, tattoos,
absolutely.
And
I like to think my tattoos are a lot better, but...
Yeah.
That's just opinion.
And he
fact.
Does more flips than I do. So.
Right, you did that one dive and it scared the shit
out
of
me. I think he might do more flips with women than I do, but
damn
I, you
right.
know, I'm
damn
not
right.
sure. I haven't ever spectated.
There's this new girl. She started my real job, and it took me less than a week to get her back to my apartment to make intercourse with her. And the sad part is, she's engaged.
Congratulations.
And sir. Spanish. So I had to check my wallet every, like, 5 minutes, but, yeah. She was
did you cross that off the bucket list?
Yeah, definitely. I said I wanted to fuck a midget, so I did that. And my next one is actually an amputee that I want to fuck. It's like a novelty that I have.
Are you
so,
are you following Tucker Max right now?
No.
Is this what this is?
No, I do
have
love Tucker Max. Oh,
oh
yeah.
I think you're trying to be like Tucker Max
right
now.
I do want to be Tucker Max.
You ain't fucking Tucker Max.
I said I'm not Silas. I said I want to be like. I hold him on a pedestal. I want a fucking amputee.
He's an idol the whole man.
I don't even know
he
what
is.
To say. This interview is just gone completely off the rails. I'm not. I don't care. I mean, at this point.
Yeah, it's good shit. Well, I'm gonna go try to finger bang one of these girls during the main event.
Great. Now, now my podcast is gonna be absolutely boring. Thanks.
The pain.
Follow that.
Yeah. Thanks. Why don't you give me a few drinks first? Maybe I can do a little spunky.
I don't even know where to go. I don't even know where to go after that. You were in the ring with Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly. They're pretty famous, so why don't you talk about them?
Well, what do you want to know?
What was it like to be in the ring with the Ring of Honor champion and one of the fastest rising stars in the independent scene?
Well, fastest rising star in the independent scene. I mean, I'm everywhere, you know, so... For me to be the fastest.
I was calling O'Reilly. I was complimenting
you. I thought
you
were talking about me. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I knew what you were talking about.
This is complete train.
Yeah.
So Davey Richards is the Ring of Honor champion. Kyle O'Reilly, one of the fastest rising stars. I'm not saying you're not.
Oh, no. I'm just fucking around, just trying to make this entertaining now. But,
yeah, you really got a lot to do.
I gotta amp this podcast up. I don't know how to follow Joey Eastman. But,
let's talk about finger banging girls. There's no way you can top that.
I don't know. We'd be here all day if I could tell you the... I'm known as the Dirty Rook backstage.
Oh
and
boy.
In Texas as well, so...
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
I'm not a soft-spoken person all the time. I I'm a real Irish. I know how to get my licks in, if you know what I mean. But it was fun. We can get Vega over. Hey Vega, come here. We'll get Vega in on this because
we're gonna just have everybody except you on this shit.
I'm too boring. I'm too boring of a podcaster, so you're gonna help me out here.
Oh, okay.
He wants to.
I was asking about Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly because he wrestled them a couple of weeks ago in St. Louis Anarchy.
As did I. I was in that match.
Yes,
I think.
Joey Eastman.
I could have been.
Yes, Joey Eastman commented about it.
And Joey Eastman talks, and there's no way that anybody can top what Joey Eastman says.
Yeah.
So what Joey Eastman said?
Well, he said, it was a phenomenal match.
What did he say? That's the bigger
he's
question.
He's like, it was Fitchett, Vega, O'Reilly, and I go, Richards. And he was like, yeah, it's kind of hard for me to remember names. But for me to remember that match, it was outstanding. Something along the line.
He put you over, though. He said,
put us over. It was that's just cool. more of a drunken slur added to that.
All right, well, yeah, let me go drunk. Ahead and thank Joey Eastman right now. Thank you for
follow him on
words.
Twitter, at Joey Eastman.
Joey Eastman.
But it was fun. I think that match has to go down my best match that I've had yet. And it was a tag match. Me and Vega tag all over the place. It's fun tagging with him. And they kick hard, man. You know.
They really do.
They really do. You know. They kick really hard. Have you ever been hit by a car?
Absolutely not.
Doesn't even come close.
I don't plan
come close to that. It's like getting hit by two cars. But yeah, they were great. They're fun to work with.
They're legit.
They're too legit. Too legit to quit.
They're Ring of Honor, so that's good.
That is, you know.
Wish we could have got the win, but
yeah, you know, we had some interference in there, but it's a whole nother different thing.
So, I don't even know where to take this interview at this point.
Oh, you can ask us some personal.
Just completely.
Oh, you can ask me some personal questions. I don't care.
So, what I was going to ask is kind of what are your goals moving forward here in the rest of 2012? Where do you want to go? Where do you want to end up?
Everywhere. I want to go. Sky isn't my limit. I want to go further than that. You know, I want to push myself every year. I try and push myself, and you know, Vega tries to push me off a cliff, but
he wants to go to the Milky Way. So.
I want to go to the Milky Way. That's delicious
in the,
candy.
That's in space.
You want to end up in the Ring of Honor, Sidrang Eagle.
Yes. So, hopefully sometime down the road, maybe I get that Fed contract. Maybe I'm the new Evan Bourne. You know, who knows?
So it's St. Patrick's Day weekend. Are you ready to celebrate your Irish heritage this weekend?
Are you fucking kidding me? What kind of question is that? You see
that's
the
a
shirt?
Great question.
You
that
see
is a
the
great
shirt
question.
That I have on?
That is a perfect.
I have another Irish. You look at this. I got green plaid gear,
Irish,
green plaid phone cover. I don't know if I'm marking
Irish
out for myself.
Very bitter towards this holiday because everybody celebrates that.
I don't
and
give a
uses
fuck.
It as an excuse as a
I have. I'll tell you what my excuse is to drink. When Joey Eastman's standing behind you, that's a good goddamn fucking good excuse to drink.
Podcast.
And he is back. What are you? Are you Irish?
I'm a Jew, but... When I was born, I was Irish-Italian, and then I actually tried
you
to marry
yourself.
A Jew bra. And she made me become a Jew, but then I never married her, so I'm technically not a Jew.
You converted?
But I'm a Jew for the jokes.
You're a Jew for the jokes.
And because I'm really fucking cheap. Oh, shit. Athena's here. Gotta go get laid.
On that wonderful note,
that easy.
Why don't you go ahead and plug your Twitter, Facebook? Where can we find you?
She gave that up.
You can follow me on my Twitter. I have some pretty I like to think I have some pretty unique tweets, especially when I'm drunk and out. And there's some good. You can follow me at the Dirty Rook on Twitter. That's it. Just the Dirty Rook.
All right, I will definitely do that.
I have a fan page on Facebook, too. You just got to type in Matt Fitchett. That's Matt with one T.
Matt, it was a pleasure to have you on the show.
It was a pleasure to
and
be
it was
on
a pleasure
here.
Pleasure to have Joey Eastman on the
I
show.
I hope
as
that
well.
We get round two, and when we do round, if we do round two, which I'm sure we will because I'm going to make you, force you, but I'm going to get drunk before we get on here, then the fans can really enjoy this, and I won't
I mean,
be so
fans,
boring.
I mean, I think Joey Eastman's drunken debauchery has really helped this interview out.
I lost count of beers that I've had. Like, the only thing in my world right now is that I still have yet to get paid, and I have two rats outside.
I got one question for you.
Yeah.
Do you know how many women you've slept with in your entire lifetime?
117.
See, I don't see how people keep track. I don't even remember the night. This woman's seen me drunk before.
I can't wait.
She has stories.
You don't even know what the hell happened.
I'm gonna remember.
No, what I do is I do it by years. Like last year, I slept with 17 women.
I got it. You know what? Next time, when you interview him, you let me know, and I'm gonna come in and I'm gonna.
Fuck yeah!
I'm gonna
get it over. Fucking go into business for yourself.
I am. I'm gonna take a couple shots at the bar before. You know, I might drink as we're talking.
You
know, like a mime kind of. Not mime, but a.
Wrestlers who don't drink, and then the ones that do just completely go off the rails.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know, they're either straight or they are drunk.
I don't see the point in taking a drink of beer if you're not planning on getting drunk. What's the point? You're just teasing yourself, right?
During the week, I don't do a fucking thing. I sit at home with my cats. On the weekends, I come out and it's like zero to hero in like 30 seconds. Like, I walked in the building today, there were two beers just handed to me, and then two shots directly after that.
Yeah, it's pretty nice when Eric Cannon's sponsored by Pabst.
Oh, it's the
Blue
greatest
ribbon.
Thing that's ever happened to indie wrestling. Fuck.
Oh, that's the best and worst thing.
By the way, I'm going to end whatever I'm doing here by just saying there's a Moondog with an iPhone.
All right, Matt, thank you once again. This has been either the best or worst interview I've ever done. I will let the fans be the judge.
All right, well, just want to say one last thing. Keep a clean soul and lick a butthole.
So there you have it, folks. You heard from Nigel McGuinness. You heard from Derek St. Holmes. And you heard from Matt Fitchett. Apologies if any of you were offended by what Matt Fitchett had to say. It was definitely an R-rated interview, but we hope that all of you fans enjoyed it. And especially enjoy the wonderful cameos from Joey Eastman. I'd like to point out, by the way, that I asked him multiple times if it was okay to have that interview aired. So, with his permission, both drunk and sober, Joey Eastman gave me permission for it. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. But before we get out of here, Chris, I know that we have some stuff to plug. So, what I will do is I will go first. Twitter.com/JeromePWPEditor is the place that you can find me. I talk about wrestling, I talk about movies, and I talk about television shows, in particular, Mad Men. And speaking of Mad Men, you can find my podcast that I do on a weekly basis with Lucia Bonifazi on iTunes. It is entitled The Mad Hour, and each week we discuss the show, and for the first four episodes or so, we were discussing the first four seasons, and then once the fifth season starts each week, we are going to be discussing the episode that just happened. So a lot of exciting stuff for the Mad Hour, and a lot of exciting stuff happening here at PW Ponderings, as I will be reviewing both of the February Chikara DVDs. Those should be up this week, and then next week, PWG and PWS, the Wrestle Reunion shows that took place in Los Angeles. Those reviews should be going up, and then this Friday night, I will be at Resistance Pro Wrestling at the Excalibur in Chicago, Illinois, so they're in downtown, and very close to me, actually, and hopefully we'll walk away with some DVDs to be reviewing from that promotion as well. You can also expect live tweets from where? Twitter.com/PWPonderings is the place to find us for live tweets and live updates from shows whenever we attend them, particularly from AEW and Shimmer is where I was last week, and obviously Resistance Pro next week. I'll be tweeting results. So, Chris, why don't you go ahead and plug whatever it is that you would like to plug for the website as well.
Definitely. And as always, we'd like to thank the people of AAW and Shimmer for their hospitality. I will be reviewing another promotion out of Illinois in Oak Forest. It is Vanguard Wrestling All-Star Alliance. Look out for their January and February show DVD reviews coming very soon to the website. And as always, follow us on Twitter at PW Ponderings. Jerome's going to be doing some live Twittering. And as always, follow us on Facebook, Pro Wrestling Ponderings, or follow our profile at PW Ponderings. And as always, fans, we appreciate the support. Give us a review on iTunes if that's where you're listening to this. And thank you again.
I can't imagine people not listening to us on iTunes at this point. Isn't that then, like, the next big thing?
It has definitely been a big thing. Only recently, though. Only recently.
Only recently, you say?
Yes.
All right. Well, for Chris GSD, my name is Jerome Cuson. You have been listening to the interview show here at PWPonderings.com. Thank you very much for listening.